Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline O'Donoghue and my clone, Melissa, has been doing my work since 2003. Joining me is single mother who wasn't invited to the rock show, Annie Lord.
Oh my God, I love it.
You're not actually a single mother, but we are talking about Avril Lavigne today, famous hater of single mothers.
Yeah, very true.
Very true. So you've chosen Avril Lavigne for your subject. Why Avril? Why now?
I think like I've just always had such a deep like fan feeling towards her, like that she's the person I most get giddy and feel that like deep obsession with. I think when I was like younger, and because I remember her first album coming out when I was I think I was literally in primary school, and feeling like, because obviously all I'd been listening to was probably like Steps and stuff, like the first time I was like, oh, this is like real music, or this is like, it felt really proper and cool, and like I understood what like rock and roll was or something, and just being so excited by her. And I remember going to like see her, I have, because I was so young, like all the memories through the early part are very blurry, but I remember like going to see her live and like eating Pringles. I just have a really strong with like the parents had to come and everything,
a little mini thing of Pringles,
and feeling kind of frustrated that we had to like sit with parents and wanting to
oh, that's so nice. But
yeah, I just love her and all her music.
So I also loved her. I'm a couple years older than you are, but this came out my first year of secondary school. Complicated happened, and it was fucking huge for me. It was really, really huge, and like I was really longing for this exactly. My only sort of experience of music up until that point was like obviously just absorbing pop kind of thing, never really going out of my way for music, but being really attracted to women and guitars and rock. And like my eldest brother's friend had given me the first No Doubt album, and that was the only real album that I had, and that was the whole sort of like Gwen Stefani, Just a Girl. The idea of being like a hard rocking girl in a man's world was so fucking exciting to me. But even then, Gwen Stefani felt very far away.
Yeah.
And very glamorous. But Avril did feel like someone who could have been plucked out of your world.
Yeah. I mean, like, she used to only wear like her own clothes and stuff. Like, she wouldn't let other people dress her, and she just felt like some kind of big sister you wanted. But it's so true as well. Like, I felt like this. Oh, this is what music's meant to feel like. Like,
yes,
this is
yes,
what
exactly.
It is to love an album and want to listen to all the songs in it. Because you have this like blurry sense of what being a fan is from like your parents talking about music, but you don't really understand what it is. And I remember being like, oh, this is like real shit.
This is the feeling. Yes, this was the first time as well that like, it was the era of like 1,000 music channels. It was the first time I was like flicking through them, looking for her all the time, just constantly, perpetually. Because that first video had such a specific look and feel of her, obviously with the vest and the tie and the dog collars and stuff, this very like this mall punk aesthetic that hadn't really existed yet and was so DIY, and it was like a pre Hot Topic. Like Hot Topic never came to Ireland anyway, but like versions of it existed eventually, but this was before all that. And seeing her with all these boys who she was, you know, ostensibly friends with in like a mall, you know, it was, and her like sort of like the smudgy eyeliner and the very like straight dishwasher color hair,
you know.
It's just like mousy kind of thing.
So much. It's weird, like, because when I was growing up, I was so like, I was all blonde and like really, I was quite little, and oh my God, I sound like Lana Del Rey when she was like, I'm a, what did she call herself when she was like doing that? Anyway, but I was, looked very like innocent and like a bit, I just really wanted to be scary like her and be like intimidating and make my parents scared that I was going off the rails because I was so sensible. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, that's so
and
sweet.
I think like And then I remember, like, when I became more into, like, emo music and pop punk and stuff like that, feeling like her music kind of emboldened me to be, like, a bit weird and rebellious. And, like, you know, like, when you're a teenager, you, like, do weird stuff. Like, in the centre of Leeds, we'd be, like, sat on the floor in the middle of, like, sat on the pavement in the middle.
Sitting in weird places of real, like, teen.
And just looking, like, annoyed and stuff. And I feel like she made it very cool or acceptable to be a bit of an outsider and be more weird.
Yes, yes.
Rather than, because I guess sometimes when you're at school, you just really want to fit in. Like anything you do that like verges away from the norm is like really embarrassing. Like if you, your packed lunch is a bit different or like your school bag isn't like a Gola bag or a Jane Norman bag, it's like really embarrassing. But I feel like she made me sort of lean into wanting to sit outside of it a bit.
Yes, completely. And this thing of like, going back to that video as well, there was definitely this whole mall culture thing that we had absorbed through stuff like Clueless and stuff. And in those movies, it would always be for these like 1% of teenagers that were really fun to look at, but it had nothing to do with your life, of like these people who were going to shopping centres and actually buying things. Whereas what this specific video and mood tapped into is like, yeah, teenagers go to shopping malls, but they don't fucking buy shit because they don't have money. So this thing of like hoarding the free samples stand and just hanging out in areas just forever.
God, and like making fun out of nothing.
Yes, yes, that's what it was really, that's what was really happening in these malls as opposed to like, oh, going shopping. Like that didn't actually exist.
Because I remember me and my best friend Vicky, we used to like set ourselves weird dares, like in the, like, I remember like on the escalators when one was coming down and one was going up, she'd be like, oh, like a date, like run your hand over everyone's hand on the other side of the like escalator, and like we'd set each other like weird
tasks.
Or like when someone's walking up to you, like sort of don't let them pass for a minute or whatever, and it was just feeling like getting so hyper that you feel like it's all, your chest is all like itchy and
oh my god, Avril Lavigne is so the patron saint of getting hyper.
So much.
Getting hyper in a semi-public space. And like I have this weird memory for, I had the exact same thing of like just get we're getting up to no good in the shopping center, and like, you know, super gluing pound coins to the ground and watching people. And like I remember I have this very specific memory, and I feel so ashamed of it, of there was like, you know how in all shopping centers there's a kind of like a reception desk, almost like a help desk. That help desk was unattended, and there was like a competition slot thing of like win a spa day or something that people had, and I fished my hand into it, grabbed an entry and rang the number using the reception desk and told someone they had won.
Oh my god, that's so cruel.
It's not cool. No, at cruel. All. Oh, yeah. It's so cruel. Correct instinct. Very cruel. And I'll never forget this. I've never done it. A prank since this day. because the woman on the other end of the phone said, oh my god, that's such good news, it's been such a rough year.
Oh no.
And I just slammed the phone down.
I've
never done a prank since.
Because I feel like though with being a teenager, you are so like pushing your boundaries, aren't you, to see where like the limit is.
Yes.
And then you reach it and you're like, oh my god, I don't want to be that person or
something. Yes, yes, exactly.
Because I had that with, you know when everyone used to shoplift, I feel like young girls all go through a phase of shoplifting.
How does Claire's Accessories make a profit?
I don't know. Because I sort of started doing that like kind of, not innocently, but on the like wavelength of just picking, you know, everyone go to Primark and like get a couple of earrings or whatever.
Yeah.
And then mine kind of spiraled quite a lot. And I was like going into Dorothy Perkins and like nicking dresses, like going quite, but like was also kind of weird with it, like not really telling anyone about that. I'd developed this weird, is it called kleptomania?
Yes, that's
it. I'd got on quite obsessed with it, but I remember getting caught once in Boots and like the feeling of like the security guards like hands like going down on my shoulder and being like, not today, love, and my heart like going through the bottom of me. And then from then on, I've never, like, you know when people steal, like, plastic bags from the supermarket?
Yeah,
I'm, like, vigilant about not doing that because of how scary it was when I got caught.
What's so funny about those experiences is that that stays with you forever, right? Mm. But to those security guards, that was the most boring part of their day almost. It's like, oh, yeah, a 14-year-old girl stealing some, like, hair clips or whatever. Yeah. Whatever. But I feel like Avril was such a key character for, like, that period of your life where you're ready to push boundaries, but not too far.
Yeah.
And that's why she was so important.
Yeah. It's funny as well, like when you listen to her lyrics, because a lot of them are quite like, yeah, she's like got this like rock aesthetic, but they're not like, they're never rude. Like, she doesn't swear or like, a lot of them are about like men being shitty to her and smoking weed instead of going out. Like, they're quite like Puritan vibes actually when you're listening to them. Like, she's not actually singing about like robbing from a shop or whatever. Or like,
yeah, yeah. Like, it's funny. They are very clean cut. Like, I think Alala's conversation is going to be based on this question of authenticity that has always surrounded her, and I think is probably one of the reasons why the sort of she has a clone sort of thing has really taken root, because from the beginning, like, she started with this song about Complicated, which is about being fake and being a poser, and then immediately she's been dogged by all this stuff about, is she fake, is she a poser, and her disputing with her songwriting partners on that first album, The Matrix, as to whether or not she had written any of these songs or had a part in them. But I definitely think the thing that falls down on the side of her being a record company product is how conservative a lot of her values are in her songs. The one I feel so conflicted about, and I love it and I hate it, is Don't Tell Me off the second album.
Yeah, I still love that one. But yeah, it's weird when you sort of have that thing when you're listening to a song and you actually listen to it. And then you're like, oh, it's kind of weird. Because on the one hand, it's sort of like, oh, I'm not going to let this man like sort of take control of, and I'm going to say, set the boundaries. But then at the same time, it's like, sort of making out like, I'm not like that girl who's going to let you have your way with me. Like, I'm not like, it's always like putting, sort of establishing herself via like being rude about other, or like judging other women's behavior. It's always like a separation.
Which is always a thing that she does throughout her career. Yeah, it's like, so the verses, they're so what you want a teenage girl to hear, right? They're like, yeah, you're right. Drawing boundaries, consent, all that stuff. Like, consent was not in the conversation at all yet. Like, people just weren't talking about it, but the idea that like you should always say no was. And so the verses feel very like, yeah, make, you know, only do with what you're comfortable with, etc., all these great vibes that you want teenage girls to have. But the chorus is, did I not tell you that I'm not like that girl, the one who gives it all away?
Yeah.
And it's just fucking two-pronged thing of like, okay, first of all, who the fuck is that girl and why do you feel like so superior to her? Second of all, giving it all away, it's like this really dated concept that like your sexuality is this like gift you give to men and only the most deserving parties should get it, you know. At the same time, a fucking banger.
yeah it is confusing as well, because like you know when she at the beginning of her career, she was like on the cover of Rolling Stone with a thing that said like the Britney Slayer or whatever, and she was always making comments about Britney, like calling her a hoe and saying, oh, like she always gets her belly out on stage, like I'm not gonna do that, I'm just gonna be me, and like again like asserting her authenticity or whatever. And it's almost like I feel like for people to take her seriously as an authentic thing, it's like she almost had to like make out she wasn't like this commercial pop product, but by doing it by like shitting on other people.
Yeah.
Or like that she wasn't like, I think it's like the video's almost, or that song's almost doing a similar thing, being like, I'm not like that girl, like always creating this distance, which is crap.
crap. And it was the same in Skater Boy.
Yeah.
Another banger, but this assertion of like, I mean, we all know that. I'm not going to say the lyrics of Skater Boy. We all know what they are. It has been my karaoke song several times. But it's very mean-spirited. And it's definitely this sort of tomboyism sort of thing, this sort of like Gone Girl, Cool Girl aesthetic that we were all aspiring to. But also, like, you can't dismiss her too much for it, because she was a very young woman. Like, she was 17 when Complicated came out, and she had already been on this label for like well over a year. Like, she was signed really young, and so we were all participating in that same culture, so for her to have been a victim of it as well.
Yeah, it's funny actually, I was reading that she said that song was written about the frontman of Limp Bizkit called Fred, I don't know his name.
Fred Durst?
Yeah. Apparently he like flew over to one of her shows to try and have sex with her. And she was like, she sort of said in an interview that, and she was like, oh my God, like he just thought I was going to have sex with him. Like, absolutely not. And then you hear stuff like that and you're like, that's so cool. And like, name and shame, how cool. But then it's, And then, and I think, and then he sort of denied it, but that's what she said it was about. but I don't
know. Just don't tell me.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The weird thing about her character is that, like, she's not very eloquent. Like, she does feel like just like a teenager who's been plucked from a mall and then put on TRL, and you watch these old interviews with her and she's like, oh, I don't know, I was rocking out with my friends and then, I don't know, it's crazy, bye.
Yeah, yeah. Or even if you read like a profile with her now, it's like you can tell the journalist is like working with nothing, because they'll be like this really eloquent, beautiful description of like her body language, and then it'll be like one line from her being like, yeah, that's right, or something. And it, yeah, she which is weird, because like, I guess you'd always think with like songwriters they might have, but yeah, she still carries that kind of awkward, stunted teenager thing where she like, and in when you see videoed interviews of her, she's always like staring at the floor and sort of picking with her nail varnish and just really moody teenager vibes.
Yes, and like in a way that does not feel like, feels like authentically uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That is actually the most authentic thing about Avril Lavigne, is that she's legitimately uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, not really that sassy, but more just feels like a grumpy teenager that you've called out of their room for dinner and they just want to go back to MSN and they're like, I don't know, Britney is stupid, bye.
I love that though, because I feel like, you know what I was saying earlier, like, I feel like it allowed me to like lean into that and be like, it's okay to feel really awkward and weird and made it less, just took the pressure off and made that kind of a behavior thing that was cool to be an outsider and be grumpy.
Totally. Like, also, there's this thing with, it's like, back to the sort of authenticity question. There's this, like, it felt like from the beginning, like there was I felt like of all the things that I've loved in my life that I've been told not to love, the quickest turnaround was Avril Lavigne and Maroon 5, I think, which I've already done an episode on. But, and the reason why being that, oh, she's representing herself or being represented by a studio as this authentic singer-songwriter, and she's not. She is a industry plant who has been grown and groomed. And the kind of the gotcha moment for these people is always like, now it's Wikipedia, but back then it was the CD sleeves of being like, look how many writers are on this song. Look how many producers are on this song. And I think that is such a limited and narrow way of viewing the music around you or the art around you. Because, and people do the exact same thing with Beyoncé. Remember when Beyoncé was at a real cultural domination point, like the sort of single ladies era where she was like, you really couldn't turn around without Beyoncé being somewhere in the culture. And I remember people being like, well, have you seen how many fucking producers are on that song? And people do this with women artists so frequently. Whereas if they look at like a Justin Timberlake credits list, they'll be like, oh yeah, that's his collaborators.
Yeah.
Some of them are rappers. Rappers love Justin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, I feel like there's always, people find it hard to believe that women can make art. And if they can, it's like there's got to be some other explanation for it. Or, you know, like when they're always, people are always like, oh, her character's unlikable, as if it wasn't on purpose, sort of like, oh, I didn't like the character. And it's like, well, it's written so you don't like the character. It's like people are always trying to find weird flaws in it. And I think it's, I mean, she was 16 when her first album came out. I'm sure she had a lot of help, but it's like her voice is incredible. And like, the second album, she's got so many credits on it. Like, she obviously is so talented. But it's like this weird thrill of finding out, like you were saying, like a sort of gotcha moment.
Totally. And the thing is that like people want someone to either be 100% authentic or 100% fake. And the truth is, with every single person we see in the media landscape, no matter how much of an auteur they claim to be, there is a mix of influences and references and collaborations going on. And I think when people see that with someone like Avril Lavigne, who's obviously so young as well, they're like, oh, she's just been plucked and groomed and made into this product. But the truth is that, like, obviously there are differing accounts on that first album. Like, The Matrix feel like she's tried to steal songwriting credit from them, which is fair enough. But every account of it, and I've read quite a few in preparation for this podcast, is like, they met this talented teenager. She had a great voice. She'd won a singing competition with Shania Twain. And they were like, oh, we're going to make her into sort of a country, Dixie Chicksy sort of type of Shania star. And that she, at 16, was like, no, that's not the artist I want to be. And she played them, System of a Down, who were her favorite band at the time. And she was like, this is the sound I want to do. And then they kept working together. Apparently they were at one point on the verge of dropping her because it was becoming so difficult. Then they sort of hit on this sound for Let Go. And then they were off to the races. And like, first of all, for such a fucking young person from buttfuck nowhere, like from French Canada, like not Toronto, to like to be that strong and be that self-determined, even if she's not writing every lyric, to have a very clear sense of the things she's not going to be from that early an age is fucking cool.
So cool. It's also like, you know, when people sort of reference like, oh, she was, you know, she was like a church singer and she did all this. It's like, oh my God, teenagers change so much. Like I've had so many different phases through like growing up that, and they're all bizarre. And it's like, it doesn't mean that it's
and all legitimate.
Yeah. I was like, I was actually looking with a friend the other day. I was trying to decide what my worst phase was. My 18th birthday party was definitely my lowest because I was wearing like this, like floral kind of like really granny-ish dress with like a trilby. That was definitely the worst one I went
through. So cute.
So I feel like I completely believe that she was sort of became a grumpy, rockish teenager because she was kind of pushing away from like the like very Christian upbringing she had.
Yeah. Okay, what song would you like to talk about next? I feel like we've talked about Complicated quite a bit. Have we said everything we'd say about Skater Boy? Is there anything else on Let Go we want to talk about? Because I think I'm With You is a fucking great song.
Do you know why I love that as well? You know when people do that thing where they're screaming and then they sing like really quietly and then they scream again? It's just such, especially on like, you know when there's always those bands where there's like in screamo bands where there's a guy like screaming and then there's a guy that sings like a girl. I love that like thing and I feel like she's kind of doing it there.
Yeah. And like, I always liked it. Like I loved this album. Mm. I adored it. But re-listening to it for this podcast, I'm With You, like, really got me.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I have a new appreciation for it as a grown-up that I could have never had as a teenager because it's so about the feeling of being in very populated spaces like parties or whatever and feeling really alone, right? And obviously that's a feeling you come into as a grown-up. And the lyric that really gets me is, isn't anyone trying to find me?
Yeah. Oh.
There's something really evocative about that of like, yeah, like my friend tells the story about she had this crying jag at a wedding when she's not single now, but she was single for a long time. And she just broke down at a wedding because her friend's husband came up to her and was like, oh, have you seen Alice kind of thing?
Mm.
And she's like, oh, there's nobody at this party who would try and find me.
Oh, that is the worst feeling, isn't it? When you feel really alone somewhere and you're sort of like do something, you know, you like pretend you need to find something or some to like be doing something in the room. Oh, it's so awful.
Yeah. Or just go for like a long break in the toilet,
you know? Yeah,
and having to judge the amount of time you spend in there being like, this is too long for a wee.
And as a teenager I relate to that feeling so much because I was really I was a bit like on the outskirts. Like me and my best friend Vicky would, we were so close, but we were very like sort of alienated everyone around us by either being mean to them or they were mean to us, if you know what I mean, and sort of loners. And like, I remember going, this is going off on a weird tangent, but like, I just remember being at school once and she was off sick for like a week and I realised I had nowhere else to hang out with. So I like went to the toilet and like sort of had my feet like on the toilet thing, like something from a teen film. And I remember like some really cool sixth forms were in the toilet and they like wrote a note being like, are you okay? Because I'd obviously been in the cubicle for ages. I'm being completely mortified and having to like really like come out the toilet really quick and like walk off because I was like, oh my God, it's so embarrassing that I've just been like hiding in the toilet. But yeah, Lona Avril vibes really filled that.
And there's so many Lona Avril songs. Like there's so many songs. Like obviously this is like through emo phase and whatever and like teenagers feeling alone, like it's not the most original thing in the world, but there's quite a lot of songs that like they're lyrically very simple but they emotionally feel like quite complex, like I actually think, and I think you agree, that the second album is better than the first.
Yeah, I feel like I got so much satisfaction as well, like being a teenager and being like, have you heard the second album? Or like, I feel like she's much closer to like the kind of artist she wants to be or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you were right. She was much closer to the artist she wants to be. Like, it's so whenever me and my boyfriend go to Ireland and we rent a car and whatever, we always do it with the CDs that are in my childhood bedroom kind of thing. And this is one of the CDs we always pick out. So I actually, this album has been in my rotation for quite a while now. Yeah. You know, like I haven't really let go of it because every time I go home, I'm like, oh, pop it on in the rental car. But the one that like, that song, How Does It Feel, which we both put on our list, which is not a single, but the lyrics to it are, how does it feel to be different from me? And it's quite simple, and it's like this. What's always interesting about second albums is that they respond to fame, really, right? Especially if the something as huge as that first album was. And what it feels like a song about disassociation. It feels like somebody who's been on the road for years now and has lost kind of a sense of connection with people. And it's that sort of, you know, there's a kind of internet meme that goes around every now and then that's like, oh, how do I know that like you're, how do I know that anybody else is real kind of thing? How do I know? It's like a Truman Show type thing. How do I know whether people around me are actually people? And like, when you listen to that song in the context of like a very, very famous, very young person, I'm like, oh, do you know where like you begin and others end anymore?
So much. I mean, I can't believe like she was like 16, so tiny. When you see like pictures of her as well, she just looks like a little kid.
And what I also loved about this album was the videos. They were so cool.
The one, because with the first album, I guess the thing that was cool about those was kind of watching her. I liked seeing her with her band, like being like one of the guys or whatever. And I feel like, I mean, I feel like she's very, I am not like other girls, but I feel like I learned, it's like from, I remember feeling like, oh, that's kind of how you get men to respect you, by being like their bro or like being like their sort of little sister type. Because it's like in all these lyrics, it's like, men are disrespecting her, but then she's got these guys around her that she's like mates with that have this like hold her on this pedestal. And I feel like I mirrored that behavior so much by being like, just like, even now I think I do it in a, sometimes where, you know, like I'll be with male friends and they'll be talking about having sex or something, and to show I'm like super like with, not that women, as all women talk about, but just trying to insert myself in the conversation by saying something really gross, or like, I don't know, like drinking and just trying to fit in on that thing. And I feel like Avril made me feel like that's the route to respect, not having sex with men, being their friend.
So true.
And I feel like I'm still a little bit stuck in doing that sometimes. Like, I think my first impulse with men is like to make them like feel like I'm one of them, and then after I'll kind of be more myself, but be like, I get it, I'm, and then
that, no, I am exactly the fucking same. Like, I'm totally the same. And I think for me, it's part of like having brothers growing up and feeling like that was almost a personality trait. You know what I mean? Being like, I've got brothers. I'm a dumb boy. I don't care. Like, say gross things around me. And like, and all, and like, I think that's also where that being bitchy about other women thing comes from. Being like, oh man, she is so fake and pretty and stupid, and I'm plain and and gross but funny, and you'll realize that you love me.
Because like, one of the, I remember like, there's so much stuff of her on tour, or like stories of her where she's like mooning other cars, or like eating spiders, or laughing because like, I think like she was doing a gig and she changed like complicated to like constipated and doing shit like that, and that kind of thing. I just remember wanting to be like a tomboy and being exactly like that, when like naturally I'm so much more of a girly girl and like getting like glammed up and blah blah blah, but just wanting to fit that hole.
Totally. And it feeling like, I remember when I was like 12, 13, 14, this sort of early teen era, there was a real rush on girls trying to get a male friend. Do you remember this?
And I didn't succeed. I was so, but then when I went to uni, I did make, like, most of my friends were boys. And I remember being self-aware enough to know it was very embarrassing to be like, oh yeah, and going on with voice, but feeling like it was such a novelty that I'd been accepted into this group, yeah. And just loving that they were like, oh, like Annie's like getting invited to things and being the only girl and stuff.
Yeah.
But also just knowing not to be like rolling my eyes when other girls said stuff like, I'm not like other boys, but still I was like really enjoying it.
Totally. I was obsessed with it. I was totally, definitely for like the early parts of my 20s. Yeah, the early teens was very much like, how do I get boys to be my friends? Mm. How can I mold myself into being someone who boys want to be around? And I can be the sort of Avril Lavigne character who will, like, yeah, moon people and like, because I think that was kind of my sense of humor anyway.
Yeah.
And also, I think, to our defense, I think it was it felt so restrictive being a teen girl. Mm. And like especially girls at that age, I think when girls get to their mid to late teens, they really fucking hit their stride. Mm. And like, some of them are still bitches, but I do think a more sisterly energy takes over, and yeah, that like, we're the gang, we're girls, we love each other, fuck you kind of thing. That if you can manage that dynamic when you're at that age, like, it'll set you up for the rest of your life. But for those early teens, I think because we're all changing so much and monitoring each other all the time, we're like obsessively clocking each other all the time, it's a really, really bitchy time. It feels really restrictive, it feels really awkward, it feels like the social games girls play at that age are like akin to like the court of King Henry VIII. It's all about like perceived slights and who's talking about who and who invited who to where. That like finding if you can find company with like boys, it can feel really freeing.
Yes, it's weird though, because I don't even think that I was that
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I don't think I was a mooner. I think I just would sort of slip in to hang out with men, but actually not share like a lot of that humor. So just kind of be like this like weird support act where I was like laughing on the sides and showing how cool I was with it, but like actually not being able to be like goofy and like, I'm like loud, but very loud in the way women talk of sort of constant
chatter
and like laughing as you're going, but I'm not like very good at like a ba-dum-bum-tsh, like punchline.
Yeah.
So I don't think, it naturally doesn't work for me, so I don't know why I have such an obsession with it. But yeah. I mean, now I'm definitely, like, most of my friends now are girls, and I'm,
same.
I'm on a healing process.
Totally. So like, yeah, it's like it almost goes in a wave. So it's like early teens, obsessed with boys and being around them. Late teens, mostly girls. Early 20s, like, which for me was like post uni moving here kind of thing. I felt like all of the women I met, no matter how much I liked them, they all had their gang sorted.
Yeah, I had that when I moved to London.
Really?
Yeah, and it being really difficult because I feel like women groups do become, because they're so trusting and like loyal.
Yes.
It's very hard to get in a group once it's been established. And for so long, like, when I moved to London, I was like sort of going for like one-on-one dinners like all the time and loving it, but feeling like, oh, I've not got like a group.
But they never like spiraled into anything bigger of like, I think it was like 3 years before I was invited to anyone's house, you know?
Yeah. And then when I finally got it, I remember like sometimes I'll just be sat there sort of like looking, just seeing like grinning, being like, oh, yes. Such a nice feeling.
I love, but boys will accept you at that level of being like, I mean, let's face it, at first, probably because, like, okay, we'll let this girl hang around because she's, like, reasonably good crack and maybe she'll fuck one of us kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, but then they'll just sort of, like, include you in their just pinty Tuesday night plans and you can really feel like you can have a gang quite easily. The downside of that being is those male friends were absolutely abandon you once they have a girlfriend.
Yeah, so true. Or like, I'd be invited, but it'd be like, if there was like a sort of Christmas meal or something, it'd be like the guys, and you're never fully, I feel like it's really hard to feel like you're actually one of them. Like, it's easy to get in, but you're never like, you're always still a girl, so you're never in, if there's...
Yeah, you don't have the VIP wristband.
No, you know? You don't, yeah.
You have a wristband, but not the right wristband.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah, sorry, this is so off the point. I remember, but like, I do think that a huge part of how Avril Lavigne was marketed and how she genuinely seemed to be, like, it didn't seem like they invented character traits for her and then she did them. It seemed like she did things and they marketed them as character traits. Do you know what I mean? If you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's also like, we're saying all this stuff like she was like a sort of I'm not like other girls kind of person, but at the same time, like, emo music or like pop punk was like so incredibly sexist, and it's so cool that she, like, she was the first person I can think of that was like in that pop punky kind of place.
Yeah,
because like I remember like all the songs would kind of put women on this like huge pedestal where they're like this really idealized beings and they'd be like so beautiful. Like, I remember there's like a Taking Back Sunday lyric where it's like something, he says something about like slitting his throat and he's like, with my last breath I'd apologize for bleeding on your shoes, like so over the top about like women's like these like crazy high up beings, but then at the same time they were always like cheating and like shallow and not recognizing nice guys and like, so horrible.
I'm just
about
a notch
women
in your bedpost, but you're just a line in a song.
So much. And then it's like, it was so nice to see a woman like having an active role in that place.
Yes,
which, so in that way she was like so cool as well. And then and then after that, obviously, I feel like, you know, you could sort of draw parallels with Paramore, but I feel like more it's because she was such a pop artist, it would be more like, you know, making a space for like alternative pop for women like Billie Eilish or like Willow or something. And, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know if that would exist without her. It would have taken way longer.
I think you're dead right. I think like, it's almost like a false parallel to draw between Paramore and Avril Lavigne. It's more like, oh, they were both in somewhat rocky spaces at around the same time.
Yeah.
Whereas I do think the parallel between Avril Lavigne and Billie Eilish is much more of a clear one, right? Like, or not even parallel, but like a continuation kind of thing of, I think now we're much more accepting of an idea of like, there are women who make pop music that are, you know, that have like huge emotional and artistic stakes within their work, even if they're working with lots of people. I think Billie Eilish is one of the first people who, like, a young woman who has come along and people are willing to accept that she makes her own music.
Yeah.
Which, like, that's a new thing for pop.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's so funny as well with Avril, because I remember, like, When I was obviously tiny, being like such a big vocal fan of hers, but then when I became interested in like pop punk music and like All Time Low and You Me at Six and people like that, pretending or just like making out I didn't like her or know about her or whatever, because that was like cool. She was like, again, inauthentic and like blah, 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 blah. But then, like, you know, when it became like a thing to sort of ironically like stuff.
Yes.
Like, then being able to kind of pretend that it was ironic, but actually I just really liked her music, but doing it in like an eye-rolly way.
Yeah.
And then only now I feel like it's like normal that it doesn't have to be ironic and you can just like lots of things and they don't have to be like anything other than you liking them.
Yeah.
And then now it's like I can just sit in my, almost like I've gone back to when I was a teenager, I just liked it. I mean, no, sorry, like a tweenager and just liked it.
I feel the exact same. I feel like it's like kind of why I did this podcast to begin with. I feel like I went on that same liking quote unquote bad things ironically for a long time. Or like the idea of like, oh yeah, we'll watch this bad thing and get high while we do it kind of thing.
Yeah, why does everything have to be when you were high?
When you were high.
That would make it okay.
Yeah. Like I remember, showing a friend of mine something a bit off kilter recently, like, oh god, but you were high watching this. I was like, no, I just like it.
That was funny actually, because I used to I lived with one of my like best schoolmates, and we used to smoke weed, but it was mainly because I think she smoked weed and I would smoke weed when I was with her. And then she sort of quit and then I just quit as well. But I remember like we would do like having this view that it was a more like not intellectual activity, but more of a thing if we were smoking weed watching it.
Yes.
Like this is us hanging out. Whereas like if we're just like watching TV, it's like lazy and like really boring and everyone does that. But then I stopped. I was like, it's exactly the same experience, really.
It's so true. It's such a thing. Like definitely of like smoking weed and watching like old Nickelodeon cartoons. It was definitely, there was kind of a pastiche to that. Almost, yeah. Like a vibe to that. But like yeah. just sitting down, drinking tea, watching Rugrats, it's like, yeah. Not so much.
Yeah. Like if you have to be high to enjoy it, like, are you enjoying? Yeah.
I think you are just enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God, there's so many songs on this album that I love. I fucking love Nobody's Home.
Yeah. Do you know, is the video for that is so weird though.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's like, there's obviously like in the song, like a metaphor about feeling lonely, I guess. And like, yeah. nobody's there for her or whatever. And then why is that? Then it's taken so literally in the video that she's like an actual homeless person. It just seems so on the nose.
It was, I remember feeling that it was like really saying something at the time. I was like, wow.
Brave.
This is brave. Avril's acting. She has black hair and she's brushing it in a toilet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, oh, I remember feeling like I really understood homelessness because I watched that video. And it does kind of bring back this whole thing of Avril Lavigne, the enigma kind of
yeah.
thing. Because she does seem like somebody who doesn't really have the character to enjoy fame. Like, and this is a really mean thing to say, but like someone who is clever enough to see that fame is a fiction.
Mm.
And it's like, Minnie Driver said this really smart thing recently on her podcast where she's like, being famous is like everybody around you is on drugs and you're there high.
Oh,
isn't
weird.
That fabulous? Yeah. Like they're on mushrooms and they keep yeah. touching your hair and they can't believe it's you kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, there's all that stuff, isn't there, with Avril in those meet and greets where there's like a foot of between her
yes,
and a fan.
Yes.
Like, she just doesn't seem like anyone. Like, you know, you get all these things from celebrities being like, oh, you know, I don't really like being famous, but you have this feeling like, oh, you look like you like it. Or,
yeah, you seem like you're having fun.
Yeah, like Justin Bieber or something. Like he looks like he can handle it well or in some way. But yeah. then with like her, it just looks like, God, you're not built for it at all. And she doesn't do many things that like famous people ever seem like. I was thinking like she doesn't do any brand endorsement deals or anything
like
that.
She has a perfume.
Really?
She had a perfume.
I wonder what that smells like.
Called, I know. Like it was called Black Star and it was like album tie-in kind
right.
of thing that she did a few years ago. But then like it kind of came and went and it's not something she's really, I can really imagine very well. The thing about Avril Lavigne is that, you know, she's not a strong personality, but you could also imagine very clearly how she would react to things. Like, you know, where it's like someone saying to her in a meeting, so, you know, the perfume market is so-and-so and like CD sales are down. So we're going to tie in this with this. And her going, I don't know. It's like, it's cool, I suppose. I mean, if I smell it first.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny that, you know, that meme of her where she's like, I can't remember what she's saying, but she's like, yeah, I'm like a rock chick. Like, I just want to smash things up.
People
like,
think they're punk.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
that one.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it's like, that's so funny. But then when you watch enough interviews with her, you realize that's just her all the time. Like, it's, that
yeah.
it seems less funny because you're like, that's just how she communicates always, like
yeah.
a weird teenager.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, so to go back to that point, it's like, she's clever enough to know that fame is fake, but not clever enough to find out something else to do, if you know what I mean? Like, doesn't look like she enjoys it that much. Maybe she has this great passion for music and never wants to stop. Like, she's made 7 albums. Like, she writes on more and more of them, like, as the keys, as the sole songwriter, as it goes on. But, like, it still doesn't feel like, when you watch an interview with her, this is someone who has been famous for almost 20 years now, you know?
Yeah.
And she still seems like someone who is just sort of stumbling her way through and doesn't really know what to say and is genuinely
yeah.
astonished that people are asking her questions.
Yeah. I guess, because Adele does something similar, doesn't she, where she just kind of steps out the limelight, but she seems better at it when she's like,
yeah.
she still seems incredibly charming and interesting when she does do an interview or whatever.
You get a sense with Adele that like the years that she spends out of the spotlight, she's almost like charging her batteries
yeah.
and then she just gives you a big sort of like explosion of charisma, and then it takes her a while to accumulate that again.
Yeah, you know? I feel like that's like me with social things, because I'm so like quite private and like get really exhausted when I'm like hang out with people all the time. But like, then I feel like when I haven't seen people for 3 days, I'm like, hello world, you know, like suddenly got loads of energy. I suppose that people say there's like one definition of an introvert, isn't it? Like getting charged up on your own.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, yeah, I'm definitely that one. Like,
and feeling the high of like releasing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You definitely get the sense that Adele, that she enjoys it. She enjoys her like once every 4 years publicity tour, because she knows this is just all she has to do, and then she'll go back to her nice life. Is there anything else in the second album you'd like to talk about? How about Happy Ending?
Oh, I love it. I think that's one of my favourite videos, where she looks so good in it, where she's got all the black hair under the blonde.
Yes.
And she's kind of shoving him around the supermarket. I remember thinking, like, I want a turbulent, toxic relationship so much. And just having, like, probably, like, kissed, like, one person. But, like, yeah, just thinking that was so cool. And then she, like, plays the music in front of him at the end. And it's, yeah, that's so cool. No, I love that song. I feel like it's a good, screamy... another thing about Avril is I always find funny is she loves, like, a or like a... What's, like... she's always like doing
Which like, is so pop punk, isn't it?
Yeah, she's always making like noises like that. I can't remember if she does any on My Happy Ending. What's another one I love? I love Together. That's a great one. It sounds like kind of metal, where she
It is.
I love that one. That's, I think she said that was like her favorite song on the album, and it's I feel like that one as well is so unlike a pop. I love that there are songs that just so unpop, and that just seem that you almost want to sit someone down and play it and be like, look, this is Avril Lavigne, and like getting a weird. I actually remember doing that with my ex-boyfriend once, like just, like being so wanting him to like approve of this, or like see that it was like not what you think her music was like, and getting such a satisfaction out of like proving that, where you're like really someone's, what's that? I don't know, just so a fan of hers. I want everyone to know that she's like really makes really heavy important music.
Yeah, yeah. And that thing of like feeling like a music being heavier, and this is like a real like noughties belief, music being heavier makes it more authentic.
Yeah.
It's like, why wouldn't the poppier tracks on Let Go be every bit as important as the heavier tracks on second album?
It's like in A Star Is Born, where Lady Gaga's character, I can't remember the name,
but
Ali, like, is more authentic. Like, all the bit where she's trying to be a pop star is, like, cringe, and then she makes this, like, throaty ballad is, like, seen as a more valid form of expression. But
I hated that film
for
that exact reason.
I still love the film, but I did find that annoying and weird for Lady Gaga to be making that point, because her music is so pop.
I fucking hate that movie. But I think she's a great actor, and I love Lady Gaga, and like, I'll see other things that she does, definitely. But the whole like attitude of the film was very like, she makes Shallow with Bradley Cooper's character, and everyone's like, wow, what an authentic country artist. And then she makes pop music. It's like, she's lost her way.
Yeah.
And then she comes back to sing a ballad about her dead husband. So it's like, when her art revolves around her dead husband, it is there, or her alive husband, it's authentic. But when she's on her own, it's uniquely fake.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's so stupid. Oh, Fall to Pieces, I love. Just for how sappy and sentimental it is. And like, I think just that, like, not understanding at that age what it is to be so obsessed with someone or feel heartbreak, but really leaning into those. I guess like when you're a teenager, you do feel that so much, even if you've not like had a real important connection with someone, you still feel all those feelings, don't you, of being really pathetic and I'll do anything for you. And I remember just enjoying sitting in that, and like, it's so Taylor Swift.
I always think it's such a proto Taylor Swift song, isn't it?
Yeah. And I like it when she sounds quite country-ish as well. I feel like there's a bit more on Let Go where she does sound very like more Shania Twain-y vibes.
Yes.
But I like it when she does do that.
I like, for me as well, Avril Lavigne is such an important person because she's what got me playing guitar. And like, I'm not a great guitar player at all, but like, when you're that age, when you're 12, 13, and like, you sort of find an instrument and stuff, and you have somebody who's making songs that you can learn to play. And for me, Fall to Pieces was one of those songs that I would play over and over again on my in my bedroom because the recording of it was fairly stripped back. She's a good singer, but like her vocal range is fairly small. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
So it was a really easy song to just play over and over again in your bedroom and feel like it sound like in your head it's sounding kind of close to the thing. And like, you know, I wouldn't have started guitar if it weren't for Avril Lavigne. And like, she became the gateway drug to thousands of other bands, and those bands became gateway drugs to some of the most important friendships of my life and some of the most important like things about who I am. Like, so she's like this, I don't know, this like nucleus that all this other stuff just kept reverberating out from in waves, you know?
Because it's also like kind of comes back to that thing we were saying, like not seeing any other women like do that. Like,
yes,
I can imagine so many women wouldn't have picked up a guitar if they hadn't have seen her do similar things. Because I just remember like so much stuff from when I was in emo, and it was being so all women looking at men. And like going, I think it was like All Time Low I went to see, and I remember like there being like stood there with a microphone, and the microphone just as the gig went on was just piled high with bras, like
really?
On the thing. It's so weird as well when you think about it. Like, we were probably all like 16 and all the girls in the audience like having their tops off, and like it just being such a so topsy-turvy. Not in that there's anything wrong with women like lusting after like male singers, like that's really cool, but I guess it was just nice having another situation where it was like fangirling over a girl.
But you're so right though, where it's like, I remember like, what is that Blink-182 song, Rock Show?
Yeah.
I fell in love with the girl at the rock show. Fucking love that song. Great song. But whenever I listened to that song, I never wanted to be Tom DeLonge. I wanted to be the girl at the rock show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I listened to an Avril Lavigne song and I wanted to be Avril Lavigne.
Yeah.
And that's like a fucking empowering thing. And it's like, and there was definitely in that pop punk scene, which I loved and like probably deserves its own sort of episode. It was all just about like boys being so mischievous and silly.
Yeah.
Like, and like you have like every single day, 10,000 times a day, the In Too Deep video would play for Sum 41. And I remember just thinking that was just it. That was just fucking everything, you know? It was such a fun scene that I feel like gets dismissed a lot.
Yeah, so much. But also feeling really like, I think I found it frustrating that I had all these things stopping me from being silly and goofy, that I felt like quite caged. You know, like, I just think so much of your upbringing is like sitting on a bench watching guys play football or watching them do this and watching them do that. And it's like, I wanted so much to be like Avril and be able to like break out of the mold and moon people or whatever. But just feeling so, I still feel it now, like, you know, like going to make a joke or like people are kicking ball around in a park and like wanting to go and do it, but then feeling like if you do it you'll be like a girl trying to do it rather than just someone doing it, and just feeling really mournful all the time that I'm still can't break out of that thing.
I feel really mournful about it as well, like I especially with like you're so right, we spend, unless we just happen to have this like Lola Bunny aptitude for something that comes like really naturally and also we're very sexy at the same time. Like, it's like, you know, there's such a huge movement behind it now with like This Girl Can and stuff, getting girls into sports, into movement, into like, you know, appreciating their bodies, not for what they look like, but for what they can do. But that did not fucking exist around me when I was young.
Yeah.
And I would try things, be instantly bad at it.
Yeah.
And there was nobody fighting for like, no, just keep trying.
Yeah.
And like, there was nobody there saying that shit. But now I'm in my 30s and like, you know, when my boyfriend and his brother, when they want us all to go on a double date together or something, they'll always invariably suggest like mini golf or like some kind of arcadey thing or something where we're all doing something together, which is obviously great because it's better than just like sitting around chatting. But I'm good at chatting and I'm bad at these things.
Yeah.
And it so quickly becomes the two lads, like they'll have their 15 minutes of like, let's teach the girls what the rules are of this thing that we're doing, but then it just becomes their show.
Yeah.
And then me and my brother-in-law's girlfriend would just kind of create our own little game off to the side.
Yeah.
It's like, it feels very like toddler pool or something.
Yeah, it's like you could never, I feel like I could make a really concerted effort to break out of that thing and be able to, but I don't know if I can just be bothered, but it's such, I'm kind of okay with the fact now that I sit and chat and have a great chat and watch people do those things, and it's But just sometimes I think that's really shit that I am so uncomfortable in performing anything or like putting myself out there. It's like me and my friend Rashira the other day went to do, we went for like a boxing class and it was a lot more actual boxing than we thought it'd be like boxer-size. Yeah. And like, I just remember like you had to kind of like skip around the like the big thing, punching it. And I remember feeling ridiculous and really embarrassed, but then being like, why are you so embarrassed by this? Like, just try it. Like, and feeling afterwards, like, you need to do more of that. Like, you need to be able to feel like an idiot and it be okay and like keep doing it. But then since then, I have not gone to a boxing class. But in theory, I would like to stop doing that. But
I am also at a very big point of that as well, of like, especially when you get this far into your career where we're both writers and like we've created this place where like we're good at what we do and people keep asking us to do it and we keep getting better at it. And therefore there are never huge moments where we're very, very embarrassed.
Yeah.
And so, but to be cut off from embarrassment and from your own shortcomings is actually very dangerous. Yeah. And like the older you get and the better you get at your chosen thing and the more people know you for it, the less opportunities you will get to really fucking show your arse. And it's so important that you have to do that.
Yeah, you're right. Because I even like, you know, on holiday, I would never ever try pronounce things in.
I'm the exact same.
I'm so pathetic at stuff like that.
I like do the pointing at the menu thing, which is so fucking provincial.
I do that when it's like an English, like a burger. I'll just like point at my one like a kid. It's just so pathetic.
Yeah, like I don't know how this relates to Avril Lavigne necessarily, but I feel it very deeply.
Which I guess because she was so unembarrassed. She.
Yeah.
Was carefree enough to be that person and not be embarrassed about it.
Yeah, socially awkward, but profoundly unembarrassed.
Yeah, which I think is so cool.
Like, I remember speaking it like that, socially awkward, but totally unembarrassed, is the thing where I watched a load of interviews with her and there was like the Carson Dailies and the Ryan Seacrest being like, you said this about Britney. Do you regret it? And she'd go, no. It's like she doesn't. Yeah, she feels no. Like,
yeah,
she seems very unbiased. She is. Again, I can see why people have this like cloning thing about her, because she is like kind of an enigma. She doesn't totally seem like all the way like a real person because she doesn't try and make this look how real I am, look how relatable I am thing, really. She's just kind of an awkward weirdo.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
Do you want to talk about the girlfriend era?
Yeah, well, because I remember so clearly when girlfriend became a thing and she was suddenly felt really famous again. But yeah, I suppose that song of like when she becomes really pop is, I think, works. At the time, I remember being really eye-rolly and like, no, have you heard this song that she makes? It's so much heavier.
I remember feeling very betrayed.
I did. But also kind of, it matched that moment, but I was annoyed at it in the moment because I felt like I knew her more.
Yeah, I was really angry. I had a similar thing when Gwen Stefani had the sort of Love Angel music baby years after she went solo from No Doubt and feeling like, I think this could have been around the same time where like B-A-N-A-N-A-S came out. And it became like such a meme really before memes were a thing. That's what it was. And feeling so betrayed, being like, you are an authentic artist. I have like Tragic Kingdom. You're an incredible, you're everything to me. And now you're spelling out bananas.
Yeah. It's funny though, because now that I think I'm more able to be like, oh, you know, an artist might do one thing and it not be what I like, but it doesn't sort of take away or like, I don't know, like in Heart, I think she, on that song Heart, I think she manages to do pop and like her old stuff together really great. Like, I think that song's such a banger and it's not maybe how I like to think of Avril, but like, I appreciate that song so much. And it's funny though, because like recently, like a lot of my friends love that song and always play it, you know, like when certain friend groups always have certain songs they always play. And I remember even now feeling like this knee-jerk reaction of like, no, I like wanting everyone to know how much I like her, because I don't really walk around talking about how much I love Avril Lavigne, do you know what I mean? But then feeling like, because you have such an odd feeling, I think, especially with stuff you've always loved, of like ownership.
Oh, totally.
Which is bizarre, because it's like someone else liking it or not knowing how doesn't take away from you liking it, but feeling like it's mine.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why oh, like that you knew it before them. It's such an odd thing to feel like, yeah, that you own something, but finding, especially with now, even now with friends liking it, that they don't understand it and it's mine.
Yeah, and it's so funny because like that was your first, even though Complicated was a huge single and she was like overnight stardom or whatever, it still felt like, oh, this is my thing.
Yeah.
This is my special thing that I discovered myself on the music channels.
Yeah. I'm sure there's like some really smart like Marxist analysis you could make about like the way people view, can't remember. I'm sure there's like something about how we like view culture and think we own it.
Yes.
To be said, that I don't know, but.
No, yeah, I don't know either, but feels like someone could really make that point. Okay. So Avril today, right? Like, she's obviously not as much of a key figure in the culture, which is fine because most of her contemporaries aren't either. She's still making music. Her most recent tour opened for the Backstreet Boys, who are still together.
Oh, interesting.
They're kind of love.
Yeah. It's surprising as well because, like, obviously not asked about, such, more comfortable in not seeming authentic. Or whatever, she would perform with them.
It's exactly. It's like she was positioned as something that was anti the manufactured world of the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah.
And now she is like opening for Backstreet
Boys,
you know?
Yeah. It's interesting.
Because it's what's interesting about the Backstreet Boys, even, is that like they. I don't think they have any. I think they have some fucking bangers. I think like, they're the best boy band ever. I think they absolutely shit on NSYNC. but they've stayed together and they have these like annual cruises where the. People go and party with them and like they're like they've retained a lot of that original fan base, and so that's a kind of an authenticity of itself. You know, they may have been put together by a studio, but there's no question that those men are clearly in a deep artistic relationship that's lasted for 20 years, and that's something to respect, right? Most quote-unquote authentic rock bands don't manage that.
Definitely. I think it's as well with her like new music. It's kind of, it's weird because I love Bite Me and I think it's such a good song and a lot I like.
It's a great song. Yeah. I didn't hear it. I only heard it because you sent it to me.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. And like there's so many songs in the album I think are great. But then it's also like, I think it is, I don't know if this is like sexism that I feel this way, but like it seems maybe difficult to write an angsty like song like that when you're older. But then maybe I just think, I don't know, like when... It's so full of teenage angst, basically. And it's like, I guess maybe because she's made so many other like ballads and more sentimental songs that it feels backwards, like great backwards, but backwards. But then I don't know why you shouldn't be still allowed to make that kind of music when you are older. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Taylor Swift is still, she'll still like occupy a sort of a teenage mindset kind of thing. Like, she does write like more mature songs about adult relationships, but she will sort of like... There was something on Folklore that, like, I don't know, the mall played a big part. Yeah. I was like, Taylor, you haven't been to a mall in 15 years. Come on.
It's difficult, isn't it? Like, But then I feel like you do get it with men as well. Like, I remember listening to Scorpion, like Drake's album, and feeling really like, oh my God, you're still going on about, like, like, helping a stripper feel better and like, get, you know, that kind of thing, and being like, oh God.
Such a Drake theme.
Yeah.
Whereas, so funny.
Like, I guess, like, you know, other rappers will like talk more about like their empire or something, I don't know, and it feels more like grown up, but I suppose he does that as well. But it feels like in some way she's looped back, which is why I love it, because it's way more pop punk than all the things she's made in between, but also it feels like she's gone backwards, but I don't know if that matters or not.
I find it also interesting that the two husbands she's had are like the two men in the world that would understand her life the most. So it was Derek something from Sum 41, the little cute blonde guy.
I remember feeling like that was like a real proof as well of her authenticity, which is so depressing. Like, oh, she's with this guy who's in a real band, but it's like, oh, because she's like attached. Why does that matter?
I remember feeling like, ha, see?
Yeah.
But also, like, he was definitely somebody who was like, I think Sum 41 were a great band, and like, I think the lyrics were genuinely fucking brilliant for many of their songs. But it was somebody who was like not taken as seriously because it was this fun sort of teen music. And then Chad Kroeger was her second husband of Nickelback. I just find it so interesting that these, like, you know, there's so much genuflecting around men and music, and these are probably the two least respected men in music,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, I think there's something quite sweet about their, you know, this mainstream rock or mainstream, you know, radio friendly punk thing that those men were doing that also she was doing. I'm like, oh, you guys must have loads to talk about.
Yeah. Also, I suppose, like, with her now sort of making it's, I think the album that she's just made is so, like, right in this time where, like, Travis Barker and stuff, like, are resurging and becoming cool again, which is nice. And, like, I guess through, like, Machine Gun Kelly and all that kind of, like, group, it feels like a right time for Avril to be celebrated again.
Do you think she could come back, like, one last job? I mean, obviously, she's never technically gone anywhere, but do you think the culture could pick her up again?
Yeah, I guess... because she still seems so teenage, like we were saying. Yeah. I guess, like, it's difficult when you... I don't know if she's got, like, the charisma. do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I love that she doesn't, because I like that she's this grumpy outsider almost. But then I feel like it maybe is hard for her to, like, get a lot of attention on her, because her whole thing is, like, being in the shadows a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And she, like... it's weird because she kind of has... she was initially marketed as an outsider, even though those songs were everywhere. And how can you be an outsider if your songs are fucking everywhere and charting? But now the longer... it's like the Backstreet Boys thing. The longer she stays in the game, the more she becomes an actual outsider, because this is somebody who's made fucking 7 albums, you know? And, like, nobody's really reviewing them or talking about them. And, you know, people go to her shows, but they're the people who've hung in there, you know? So I think that is a form of authenticity, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, Annie Lord, we're out of time, but you have a great book coming out that I absolutely loved called Notes on Heartbreak. Tell us a little bit about it.
So it's basically a memoir about me and my ex breaking up, and it's kind of also a sort of love story told in reverse. So on the one hand, it's like going through all the things you go through in a breakup, like getting your hair cut, like crying so much you can't like stand up, and not eating anything, and drunk calling people and all that like embarrassing stuff, which I'm so honest about. Like, it's really weird sometimes when I'm like reading it back through, I'm like, Christ. And then also going through the relationship from the beginning of it all the way to the end, and just kind of, yeah, looking at that process of falling out of love with someone, I guess. And it's, I hope it make everyone laugh and also cry. yeah, it's really soppy. And I reference lots of different books and films and stuff in that. So I guess it's like also kind of a meditation on love and heartbreak.
I really loved it. And it's like, when I was reading it, I really had the sense of like, wow, like heartbreak is one of the great, you know, muses of all art, right? Like as in, that's what, you know, since the beginning of time, it is the most common human experience. And to read somebody writing about that, and for it to feel sort of new, and for like my own first heartbreak, like I haven't like truly had my heart broken since I was like 19, but like it came back as I was reading it, and I was like, oh my God, I can feel the old wound kind of thing almost opening up. I can feel like, you know, I think you have to do such a good job of capturing the intensity of that experience that people forget they feel, you know?
Yeah, that's so nice to hear. It's like, also it's funny when you talk to people about their own heartbreaks, and I feel like you do feel it in your chest again, like you've got PTSD or something. You're like, oh, it makes you feel sick, doesn't it? Like when you're talking to someone about it. Because I remember like when I was going through it, feeling like, I can't believe everyone's been through this. It feels so bad. Like, how is the world functioning? Like, how are people going to work? Because it goes on for such a long period of time.
How are people going to work?
Yeah. Or like talking to friends being like, this is what you meant. Like, and realizing I really wasn't like there enough for like people when they were doing it, or not really understanding how to like talk to people when they said they'd been heartbroken. Like, I remember like with one of my friends sort of being like, oh, like I saw so-and-so, like, you know, in the club, he was with another girl, like saying stuff like that, and just not thinking about how, like, or understanding how bad that would feel to know, or like, or like if they were sort of saying things about them, like being like, oh, he's so annoying, he did this, being like, sort of like nodding along, but being like, oh, that's a bit unfair, or this and that, and just not letting them like rage in the way you need to, because I just didn't get how bad it feels and how irrational and all over the place you are. and finding that out and being shocked.
There's nothing like it. And it's kind of amazing that we all have to go through it, right?
Yeah. It's funny as well, because I was talking to my dad and he was like saying he's never really been through like a bad heartbreak. Mm. Just thinking, oh, that's weird, because it was obviously so bad. But then being so glad I had gone through it, because I just, when you I think about like who I was before I went through it, I was just like such a different person, and being glad that I went through, even though it's awful. Like, I don't know if I want to go through it again.
But oh, God, no. Once is enough.
Yeah, I feel like I get the picture. I've had enough growth now. I'm okay.
Yeah, good growth. Yeah, that's enough. Okay, Annie, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Sentimental Garbage, and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. The podcast was produced and edited by me, with mix and music by Harry Harris and artwork by Gavin Day. If you'd like to email me about the pod, you can do so on sentimentalpod@gmail.com or get in touch with me directly on Twitter or Instagram @Zaraline.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.